Good morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, we're going to talk about tariffs. I know it might not be the most interesting thing, but it's definitely something that's impacting our country right now. So we're going to talk about all the news that happened this week with regards to the tariffs and what the president has put into place. We've got some motorsports to catch up on. We've got Martinsville. Darlington is this weekend. IndyCars next weekend in Long Beach, which I will be there. Formula One last night or this morning in Suzuka, Japan. And of course, we'll talk about gas prices. And then, of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Pages of CNN, the website, and their business department. It says auto tariffs are now in place. And what this means for America and for you. Well, President Donald Trump's auto tariffs went into effect at 12:01 Eastern Time on Thursday, and the potential to upend the crucial American automotive industry and raise the cost of tens of millions of cars sold across the United States every year. Now, many products are likely to be subject to higher prices due to the tariffs, but none will cost Americans more or shake the critical components of the industry as the tax does on imported cars that just went to an effect, or the tariffs on auto parts that are coming soon. Now, America's economy has evolved over the past half century. Today, a service economy, not one built around manufacturing. The United States makes fewer cars than it once did, but autos are still a key pillar to the United States economy, the responsibility for driving growth and millions of jobs. However, the long-established model and economics of the industry has been shaken by these new rules. Cars are crucial to the Americans' daily lives, getting to work, going shopping, traveling on vacation. Prices are already near record levels, with a new car costing nearly $50,000 on average, and it's likely to go higher in the next weeks and months ahead, making it more difficult to afford the cars that people want or they need. Now, the Trump administration placed tariffs of 25% of all cars shipped to America and other countries. Those imports account for nearly half of the 16 million new cars purchased in the United States in 2024. That's right, half the cars. And this is according to SP Global Mobility. Mexico is the largest source of those imports, sending 2.5 million cars to the U.S. dealerships and another 1.1 million from Canada, while an additional 3.7 million come from other countries outside of America, including Japan, South Korea, and Germany. To put into context, an imported car with a value of $40,000 would be hit with a $10,000 tax, and that would cost someone somewhere along the supply chain would have to bear. It's healthy to debate over how and what the cost could be in shape between the suppliers, the automakers, the dealers, and the final consumer, according to an automotive executive. But the reality is, the consumer will see a large chunk of this coming out of their pocketbook. The Trump administration is also expected to roll out tariffs on auto part imports no later than May 3rd, when the tariffs on the car parts go into place. That means it'll cost more to produce cars at United States auto plants. That's because every domestic vehicle contains imported parts. For decades, ever since the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, went into effect in the early 90s, automakers have operated as if the United States, Mexico, and Canada are one single country. Companies move parts across the border several times during the assembly process. Today, in fact, one of 10.2 million cars made in the United States factories have a significant amount of Canadian and Mexican parts, typically somewhere between 25 and 60%. Now, according to an analyst at Bank of America, they say those tariffs on those car parts will increase the cost of American cars by about $4,000. Another analyst, according to Anderson Economic Group, puts the cost at more than $12,000 for some vehicles. Let's be honest. Long-term 25% tariffs across Mexico and Canadian borders would blow a hole in the U.S. industry that we've never seen before, and that's according to CEO of Ford, Jim Farley. Now, cars are the second largest purchase for most households behind housing. Last year, American consumers purchased about 13 new million cars and 40 million used cars. That means about 40% of the U.S. household bought a car in 2024. And I'm putting my hand up and saying, I did. I'm one of those 40 million people. Now, the millions of Americans will face higher prices soon, not just because of increased cost of building the car, but because the basic economic theory of supply and demand. Virtually every car purchase done with through a negotiation between a car dealer and a buyer will be greatly influenced by the availability of the car that the buyer wants to buy. Less supply translates into higher prices. The tariff means there's likely to be millions of fewer cars available for sale. Even the price of used cars will be affected, even though the tariffs attached do not affect them because of the squeeze on the new car market that will force buyers to look at used cars, increasing demand and thus increasing pricing. Now, here's a historic guide. What has happened in the last few years when supply chain shortages led to a price shock. In 2021, as automakers tried to ramp up production that had been curtailed during the first year of the COVID pandemic, the shortage of parts, notably computer chips, cut into car production. That drove new car prices up sharply. Soon after, most all car buyers were paying more than sticker price. The average price jumped 17% for new vehicles between January and December of 2021, according to the data from Edmunds.com, and used car prices rose even faster, 32% during that same time period. Now, Americans have been scrambling in the last week to buy cars before the tariffs take effect. All the automakers had a jump in sales for March, particularly the imported models. Now, according to Robert Wyatt of New Jersey City, who purchased a Toyota Land Cruiser, which is imported from Japan this past weekend, "I wanted to wait a year or two, but I don't want to pay more because of these tariffs." He also traded in a car that had relatively low miles but was 9 years old, and it was starting to break down. Even buyers looking at models made at U.S. factories want to buy before the prices went up. "I've always wanted a Wrangler," said Rosa Scott Wednesday after purchasing the Toledo-built model at a dealership in Pennsylvania. "I wanted to wait a couple months, but by then, well, they could be too much and price myself out of the market." But in reality, it's not just the higher prices for car buyers. It also could mean job loss for American auto workers. About 1 million people work in American factories that either assemble cars or produce auto parts that go into cars, according to the labor statistics. The Trump administration says the goal of the tariffs is to create additional auto jobs by forcing automakers to ship production to America. But there's a good chance there'll be job losses long before new factories will be built or reopened. That's because the way the North American market works. If Canada and Mexico assembly plants are shut down due to loss across the access to the U.S. markets, that will affect U.S. suppliers sending parts to those plants. American automakers and parts manufacturers export $35.8 billion in parts to Mexico and $28.4 billion in parts to Canada, according to the Commerce Department. Those exports could be forced to trim production and trim U.S. jobs. In addition, about 1 million American-made cars, or 10% of the U.S. production, are destined for Canada and Mexico. Retaliatory tariffs on cars would also raise prices for buyers north of the border and south of the border, and the risk that U.S. production cutting hours and not temporary layoffs, other plants could be affected. Now, factory workers are only the fraction of the nation's auto jobs. Another 1.3 work at auto car dealers, 600,000 working in stores that sell auto parts and accessories. Jobs at parts stores are likely not to be affected, especially if people are looking for parts to keep older cars on the road. But jobs at dealerships could be at risk from expected drop in sales. And who will be working directly with the automotive industry? Those jobs are at risk as well. There are millions of more providing services, including transportation of cars, as well as marketing of cars. Now, Trump said on Wednesday he insisted that the auto tariffs will result in automakers rushing to build or reopen plants in the United States, either shifting production or using underutilized plants or even building new ones. But automakers are not indicating any plans to go through with the cost shifting of production, at least not in the near future. Part of that is because Trump is the on-again, off-again levies that don't provide any certainty to automakers to invest billions of dollars into new plants. If they become permanent, there's a whole bunch of different things that you have to think about in terms of where you allocate the plants or do you move plants. And that's according to General Motors CFO Paul Jacobson. He told that to investors on Wednesday. But Jacobson said there, the company has too many questions about the future trade policies to make those kind of decisions at this time. "We think about a world where we're spending billions of dollars in capital and then it ends. We can't be whipsawed in our business back and forth," he said. It's the uncertainty of the policies, and the executive said there's no quick way to pivot and shift production. There are a lot of levers that can be pulled in the short term, according to an automotive executive who spoke to CNN on background last week. But we're talking about capital-intensive industry. Asked if production could be moved back to the United States, as Trump suggested, the executive said there are many challenges. If you've ever done a home renovation, you know that many things are feasible, but you have to put enough money behind it, right? The economic feasibility is a different question. At a time, particularly since we are close to capacity at most facilities coming out of the supply chain crunch, you're talking about investing in a new physical capacity in the United States, which has a very long lead time. Even some things as simple as switching a factory to make a different model can shut the plant down for a year or more to make that change. It takes more years for an automobile maker to go from announcing a new factory to the first car rolling off that assembly line. For example, Stellantis, which makes cars in the United States under the Jeep, Ram, Dodge, and Chrysler brands, agreed to reopen a shuttered plant in Illinois as a part of a deal to end the 2023 strike for the United Auto Workers. But the plant won't reopen until 2027. Bank of America said it would be essentially impossible to restore most of the auto parts due to the cost of labor in the United States and the availability of workers. Some production could shift back relatively quickly to U.S. plants producing the same models, such as a Chevrolet Silverado, which is built at a plant in Mexico, and one in Canada, and two factories in the U.S. But most models elsewhere in the United States market are not built in American factories. In those cases, shifting production back to a U.S. plant would likely take years. Now, the United States Auto Workers Union, despite endorsement for Vice President Kamala Harris during the presidential election, has strongly endorsed the auto tariffs, saying that they believe that they will eventually lead to more jobs and production here. With these tariffs, thousands of good-paying blue-collar auto jobs will be brought back to the working-class communities across the United States within a matter of months. Simply adding additional shifts or lines or numbers of underutilized plants, and a statement from the union. Right now, thousands of auto workers are laid off at Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis following recent decisions by auto executives to ship those jobs to Mexico. But many of the cars that are built in Mexico are lower-priced models that cannot be affordable when those prices are built by American workers. Automakers might as well just stop producing those lower-priced models altogether. Nobody's really talking about where the labor is coming from, according to former CEO Mark Fields of Ford Motor Company. So there's a lot of things up in the air, folks, with regards to trying to bring back these jobs to the United States. And I certainly think that having more manufacturing jobs here in the U.S. is critical to what we're doing. I'm just not exactly sure this is the most cost-effective way to do that activity. Car news from that last weekend, and the headline reads, New Approach Sends Denny Hamlin Back to Victory Lane at Martinsville. Well, it didn't take Denny Hamlin long to find a recipe for success in the Sunday's Cookout 400 at Martinsville Speedway. Hamlin grabbed the lead on lap 126 of 400 in the 7th NASCAR Cup Series of the race of the season and never looked back. With flawless work from his pit crew, the driver number 11, Joe Gibbs Racing, led a total of 274 of the last 275 laps to win the race. Hamlin pulled away for his sixth victory at the half-mile racetrack, most among active drivers, and his first at Martinsville since 2015. It was his 55th win of his career, tying him with Rusty Wallace, as he's now number 11 on the total victories in the NASCAR Cup Series. Well, the first three spots were occupied by Toyota, with Denny Hamlin winning the race, Christopher Bell finishing in second, Bubba Wallace in third, Chase Elliott in fourth, and rounding out the top five is Kyle Larson. This weekend, they are at the track Too Tough to Tame the Black Lady, Darlington in South Carolina. Yes, the Darlington race from South Carolina, the Goodyear 400, is today at noon, and that should be on Fox Sports 1, and William Byron is on the pole with his Chevrolet. But how about this? Ryan Preece driving the Kroger car. Ford is starting on the outside of the front row. Denny Hamlin will start third. Chase Briscoe fourth. And Bubba Wallace will round out the top five. And I'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, last night or slash early this morning, the race from Japan for the Formula One race from Suzuka was run, and Max Verstappen comes out on top, and it is his fourth straight win in Japan and the last with the Honda-powered car with Red Bull Racing. Lando Norris finished in second, driving for McLaren. Oscar Piastri for McLaren is in third. So McLaren, once again, second and third. The weekend before, they were first and second. Charles Leclerc is fourth in the Ferrari. And rounding out the top five was George Russell. Of note, Lewis Hamilton finished in seventh position for Ferrari. And Kimi Antonelli finished in sixth. And he's the brand new driver who replaced Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari. California NASCAR news, Fontana redevelopment plan on hold as NASCAR officials concede. Well, NASCAR has hit the pause button on the plans to build a short track on the grounds of the former Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California. The project known as Next Gen California included a plan to build a half-mile short track. Only a few suites, grandstands, and pit road remains of the original Speedway site where redevelopment began after NASCAR staged its last race there in February of 2023. The work has been slow going, with NASCAR acknowledging cost concerns about building this track. This week, NASCAR officials on an official podcast, Holler Talk, the commissioner, Steve Phelps, indicated the status of the project remains uncertain. That market is particularly important to us. What the future of the facility is, I'm still unsure of. I'd like to build a new facility in Fontana. I would. But a short track, we don't really have any room to build anything else, quite frankly. But NASCAR sold 433 of the 522-acre site for a reported $544 million, and it didn't take long before warehouses and industrial parks were built on the land. In a rendering of the planned short track leaked in 2020, incorporating the original pit road and the front stretch grandstands, new building that now occupy the space that used to be turns 1 and 2. The rest of the track is gone from the front stretch to the pit road. I do think creating a short track would be a cool thing for us, yes, but that would be about a $300 million project to do that to that facility. And is that really the best use of our money? Right now, with the cost of capital is as high as it is, it's probably best for us to push the pause button, when that's exactly what we're doing. We are hitting the pause button. Yeah, I'd like to build a facility out there, but when it's going to happen, and I don't really have a timeline. Fontana hosted the first NASCAR race there in 1997. As I'm putting my hand up, I actually was at that first Fontana race. It was fabulous. The place was packed. And they ran through the last race of 2023 with all three of the National Series contending races there. And the Craftsman Truck Series ran there until 2009. I also was there for the final IndyCar race, and that was probably almost 10 years ago. Sonoma Raceway is now the only permanent racetrack in NASCAR that NASCAR currently runs on. The Clash, which was run at the LA Coliseum for 3 years, has moved to Bowman Gray Stadium for this season. So right now, it definitely looks like the plans to build a short track in Southern California are definitely on hold, and there is no starting time frame to build that track in sight. This time next week, I am going to be in beautiful Southern California at the Long Beach Grand Prix, which is one of my favorite races to go to every year. Didn't get a chance to go last year because I went to Barber Motorsports Park and Talladega as a new entry into my motorsports travels, but I'm very excited to get back to the beach, Long Beach. And folks, it's the 50th anniversary of the first races at the Long Beach and the Long Beach downtown, and there's a lot of different cars and a lot of different series are going to be running there. Of course, if you listen to the car show, you know Jeff is a big IndyCar fan, Formula One fan, open wheel. So the IndyCars will be running there as the headliner. The IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship Series, the same cars that run it, that Daytona, also similar to the cars that run at the 24 Hours of Le Mans in France, will be there. The Super Drift Challenge, along with the Speed and Super Truck Challenge, which is Robbie Gordon's series, and also GT America. And what I'm very excited about is the historic races. A tribute to the heritage of the open wheel racing at Long Beach. Legendary cars from the three iconic series that have raced at Long Beach, Formula 5000, Formula One, and IndyCar, will all appear together on the same track in exhibition races. And there's some very cool cars, including the 1977 Johnny Player number 5 Lotus 77, which was driven by Mario Andretti to his Formula One championship. So very, very excited. That race, the IndyCar race, will be on Fox. And I'm thinking that's going to be local time, probably sometimes around 1 or 2 o'clock if you want to check that out. So I'll have some great news from Long Beach next weekend and look forward to telling you all about it. Heard an unusual automotive news. Driver's car is towed for the 7th time in a year and a half with a database error, but they just keep on coming. Well, a disabled U.S. veteran from Houston, Texas, says he's now living in constant anxiety about his car has been mistakenly repossessed 7 times. Speaking to Houston TV station, he currently owns a 2019 black Chevy Camaro, which he no longer likes to leave parked in one spot for too long because he's not sure if it's going to be there when he returns. They just keep coming and coming and coming, and they won't stop. Lack of sleep, restless, on edge. Every time I hear a loud noise, I wake up. I sleep with the curtain open. Well, that's kind of hard to do when you're looking to get some rest. The other morning, they came at 2:30 a.m. I've seen them at 4 or 5. I've seen them in the middle of the day. I call the police every time it happens. What is going on is there's an apparent mix-up related to his disability veterans plates, which allows him to use toll roads and park for free in handicap spots. The government issued plates can be transferred to future vehicles, including with the car's registration. These plates have been on 5 other vehicles over their lives. However, it seems when he traded his previous 2016 Chevrolet Camaro for a 2019, the database used by repo drivers and finance companies failed to make the changeover. That means the digital recognition network database, which tracks the movements of vehicles using automatic license plate readers, has been constantly failing to differentiate between the new car and the old car. He said when the trade-in was sold, the new owner missed payments. That meant the 2016 Camaro, which he sold, was put on the repo list. The new owner's license plates were never changed in the system. Now, Asset Repo, which sent one of its trucks to repossess the 2016 Camaro on one occasion, said the driver made a mistake by taking the 2019 Camaro and should have checked the VIN number first. When the driver returned with the wrong car, the manager returned the car and fired him for the mistake. The manager of the site said the only way to fix the problem is that the DRN database needs to be updated. Now, well, the man who owns the 2019 car is too worried to leave his car parked anywhere for too long until the problem is fixed. Gas price with our friends at the folks at AAA. Right now, the average gas price across the United States is $3.25 a gallon. Arizona, $3.41. New Mexico, $3.04. Colorado, $3.12. Utah, $3.23. And over in California, $4.95. All right, let's find out what's going on with our local gas prices here in Arizona. Well, the cheap gas is still down south right now, $2.69 at the Arco in Casa Grande, the Circle K in Casa Grande at $2.73. And, cheap gas, you got to go to Casa Grande. Well, the cheapest gas in the metro right now is down in Maricopa at $2.99 at the Circle K's. Here in Metro Phoenix, the Shell station on Southern Avenue at $3.09, Sam's Club on 83rd Avenue at $3.19, and the Arco station on Thunderbird and 83rd Avenue at $3.15. Well, folks, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I have a 1992 Toyota Priva. I love this little 5-speed minivan, or I want to love it, but I have strong feelings about this. Only 160,000 miles, so it's still got a lifetime. My husband says if we can't figure out why it won't start occasionally, I have to get rid of it. So the van always starts when it's cold. But if I drive it for distances more than a few blocks, let's say to the grocery store, run in and try to start it before the van has a time for an hour to pass, it won't start. When it's hot out, it might take 30 to 45 minutes before it will start. In colder weather, maybe 5 to 10 minutes. I've tried so many different things. I've talked to different mechanics. I've drove without the gas cap. I've replaced a few parts and no luck. I want to keep this car. It's rust-free and it's a great vehicle once we can figure out what's going on. And that's from Deja. Well, actually, Deja, you're not the only one who loves these little Privas. There's quite a minor little cult about this, and I do believe this is fixable, and perhaps easily. First, you need to find a mechanic who is patient and willing to work with you and solve this puzzle. The first thing, and that's a guess, my first guess is that it's a dying fuel pump or a fuel pump relay. That can definitely be heat-related that would cause your symptoms. The easiest step to fix in the first place would be just replace the fuel pump relay. It's quick and easy. And if that happens to fix it, hallelujah. Now, if it doesn't, your mechanic can rig up a fuel pressure gauge to the fuel pump to see how the fuel pump is working while you're driving. If I remember correctly, the engine cover is between the front seats on this van, so that could actually be pretty easy to do. Now, the gauge will show you when the engine first starts cold, and the fuel pressure would read something like 45 pounds PSI. When the engine starts to bog down, you can glance at the gauge in real time, and you can see it drop to 40. And 30, and then 35, and then ultimately the engine will die. If that happens, well, then you know you need a fuel pump and you're all set. Now, if it's not a fuel issue, you need to look at an electrical problem. And your new best friend, / mechanic, can hook up a high voltage test light that flashes whenever the spark plugs fire. Then when the van dies and then you go to crank it over and you don't see the flashing light, well, you're probably not getting spark. And I might suspect that something like an ignition coil could be overheating. Now, there's a good chance that your dedicated manservant, / mechanic, could solve this. And if you do, well, then you too can go on to fix another 500 things that are wrong in the world. And good luck with this long living Priva. Now, folks, I'm not really familiar with this Priva minivan, and it sounds like there's an awful lot of people who love this vehicle. I find it interesting that that the husband is saying, look, you need to get this thing fixed or we're going to get something new. I guess I've got to believe that the story behind that would be the fact that he's maybe having to come rescue his wife several times when the car doesn't start, or when the car is constantly in the shop and he's now having to potentially maybe run his wife to the grocery store. It's usually the wife in these situations that tend to say, hey, my car's not running very well and I'd really like to get a new car. And certainly right now, as we've talked about with what's going on with the economy and what's happening with the new import tariffs, and prices of cars are going to be getting more and more expensive very quickly, I can see how that maybe this would probably be a very good idea to see if we can get this van fixed instead of buying a new one. And as a Toyota driver myself, 160,000 miles, yeah, this car has definitely got a lot of life left in it if you can just get it fixed. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.